You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 137 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, original one-of-a-kind jewelry made right here in BC. Check out their link on our website to see all the great custom pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. Mojo Camp is off this week, tending to a prior commitment, but we have two guests for you tonight to fill the show. The Lions may be struggling on the field, but they are having a championship season with their social media and digital campaigns. Matt Baker, digital content coordinator for the BC Lions, will join us to talk about all that goes into creating that content that produces a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day operations of the football club. Next, we'll check in with Regina ahead of this week's contest with the Riders. Former Riders play-by-play man Rod Peterson is still in tune with all things Riders, and we'll get the scoop on the green and white as well as on his new internet-based sports show, The Rod Peterson Show. But first, a few thoughts on last week's game and where the Lions are 5 games into this 2019 CFL season. Well, where do we start with last week's game? The best way I can describe it as a Lions fan is this. The loss to the Edmonton Eskimos in Edmonton was disappointing, but the loss last week at BC Place was demoralizing on so many levels. When a team takes you to the woodshed like the Eskimos did in week 2, that shouldn't sit well with you. You shouldn't need to be motivated the next time you play them. You should have enough pride and determination to play your best game and right the wrong that happened the first time around. We saw none of that from the Lions last week. This team wasn't ready to play and showed no pride against a team that pushed them around for the second straight time. So, now we ask why. The first question you need to ask is why this team wasn't ready to play. Is it the coaching staff? Much has been made of the lack of experience on this staff. There were reports from practice last week that head coach Devon Claybrook stopped practice and tore a strip off the team. Obviously, he didn't like their focus and felt the need to let the team know. But when it comes right down to it, as a professional athlete, you expect your coaches to install a game plan to help you succeed. My untrained eye isn't qualified to judge the game plan that was put into place or how it was or wasn't executed. All I can do is judge what I see on the field. Coaches don't play, and what I saw from these players last week was extremely disappointing. I find it extremely hard to believe that the coaching staff was the root of the problem. The next question that needs to be asked is whether the players on this team are good enough to execute the game plan. Ed Hervey preached during the offseason that his goal was to fix both sides of the line of scrimmage. The results have been underwhelming at best. The defensive line can't pressure the quarterback and has issue with run containment. The offensive line, while having a couple decent showings, isn't showing it can protect Mike Riley and can't block consistently enough to counter the pressure other teams are bringing. The depth on both sides of the ball is lacking. Brian Burnham and Lamar Duran have been good. Shaq Johnson has been fine when he gets the ball thrown his way. But where is Daron Carter? We have yet to see the dangerous Carter in this offense, and laughing it up with Eskimo players down by 30 points last week wasn't a great look. There were times during the game last week where he looked to be going through the motions. The Lions need and must get more from Daron Carter, even though he's been quote-unquote good in the room. So you need to ask yourself, was too much money committed to too few players, so much so that it's affecting the Lions' ability to build enough depth? At this point, when you look at the roster, who do you sit? Who do you plug in to try and fix some of the issues that are going on? The cupboard is pretty bare. The offseason scouting has to be considered a fail right now. Where was the competition for the offensive line? Where's the import depth at receiver? Where's the rush end they so desperately need? The options are few, and with lingering injuries to two offensive linemen expected to be the backbone of this team, Joel Figueroa and Suk Chung, the Lions are facing a disaster. The acquisition of Mike Riley is being wasted. At the start of the fourth quarter last week, Riley had 83 yards passing. Just think about that for a second. And that's not all on him. He doesn't have time out there to run the offense. It needs to be fixed, and offensive coordinator Jarius Jackson has to find ways to work with what he has and find schemes that will give Mike Riley a chance to succeed. So far, he's failed. Penalties, a couple time counts on Riley, a delay of game penalty on a kickoff, illegal contact, again, a continuous lack of focus and a lack of execution. Missed tackles, blown coverages, drop passes, you name it, it's happening to this team right now. Last week had to be rock bottom. This week, with the first of a critical back-to-back against the Riders in Regina, the Lions better show up. If they don't, you know what kind of team we have. They failed the first test in the rematch against the Eskimos. If they fail this one, it's going to be a long season, folks. All right, let's move on to more positive things now. And while the Lions are struggling on the field, off the field, they're having a championship season when it comes to their digital and social media content. Matt Baker is the digital content coordinator for the BC Lions, and he joined us now to talk about all the cool stuff the team has been doing this season. Matt, thanks for taking the time tonight. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Brian. Yes, great to be here. And use the word positive. Judging by a lot of the replies, comments, and reaction we get to a lot of our stuff this season, it's nice to hear that word. But fans are passionate.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations to you and your wife, Stephanie. You both recently became parents for the first time. Welcome your daughter into the world. How's the parenting gig treating you?
As we speak, or as we're recording this, I should say, she's feeding and she's been up and down and just rinse, repeat, right? I mean, change diapers, feed her, and hope she gets good sleep. But she's, it really is awesome. It's been a fun past 5 weeks or so. It's just flown by, and it's funny. It was actually Jamie Terrace in our office was saying to me, before you know it, she'll be dating. I'm not ready to think about that yet. But no, thanks. It's been fun for sure.
Well, let's start by telling our listeners exactly what your responsibilities are with the BC Lions, both on social media side and producing content for the club.
Yeah, I mean, Niviki pretty much said it there. I mean, more details. I mean, basically it's a day-to-day thing, right? I mean, game times, it's funny. The number one reaction that I get from people, while games are going on, I'm getting people texting me and tweeting me, get off your phone, watch the game. It's like, well, that's kind of what I'm doing. We're kind of doing the live tweeting thing during games. And well, I shouldn't even say that. It's funny. You know this. I mean, you've kind of mastered the social media aspect for everything you do, Brian. But you don't really live tweet games anymore. You more react to it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times during games, it's doing, taking little videos of little reactions and, some of the stuff that, you try and think it might go viral. Some of the more off the cuff stuff, some of the dancing stuff. Although since the whole logo incident in Hamilton last year, I've kind of shied away from filming the dancing part of it. But basically we cover the team for the team, as mentioned, game times, it's social media, Twitter. One thing I do that kind of gets a positive reaction, I think you've watched it before during warmups, I try and go on Facebook Live and do a little bit of commentary.
Yeah.
Kind of bring the fans up to speed as far as lineup changes and injuries and the overall mood on the road kind of thing. I do it at home too, but that was one of the things when I started the job, I guess at the start of the 2016 season, and props to Jamie Cartmell, the director of communications. He was the one who was persistent in saying, we got to have our content team on the road, and we capture certain things that get good reaction. Comes to mind, you remember that time we were stuck in Montreal and jammed in the airport? Jonathan Jennings was playing drums with his water bottle on his chair, and that's the kind of stuff right there. And it's also the actual football content too. I mean, I write game recaps, game previews, features during the week. We've actually expanded our content this year. We have a weekly feature with Julio Caravetta, the Blitz, that's gotten lots of good reaction.
Yeah,
kind of awesome. tee up the next game. Our new head coach, Devon Claybrooks, you know, he's from the Wally Buono School of Accessibility. He's always willing to help us out. So we do a one-on-one interview with him on day one every week. So we've kind of expanded a bit of the content too, to feature a little more of the feature type stuff and the football type stuff, some named segments. And yeah, overall, it's a pretty fun place to be. Although after a 1-4 start, it could be a little more enjoyable. But overall, I couldn't ask for more. It's definitely a lot of fun.
Lions have received a lot of praise this season for their marketing and digital content. How many people do you have in the organization that are dedicated to producing this content?
Well, it's myself and Alex Ruiz is our manager of digital media, and she's excellent with it too. You know, she kind of gives us the freedom to pursue stuff and pursue different stories. And it's our two video guys, Josh Clausen and John Loban. Some of that stuff you would have seen before the start of the season, that commercial with Mike Riley where he's hooked up to the machine, and GM Ed Hervey, I guess he's supposed to be a doctor or a scientist or something. That's one of those things where they were planning out that concept. You're thinking, what the heck are these two guys talking about? But I've learned to sort of wait until it's all shot and edited and that goes out and it gets, you know, hundreds of thousands of views almost, I think, that commercial spot for the campaign alone. So total team effort. I mean, our video guys are very good as far as the artistic stuff and some of that little off-the-cuff stuff that isn't necessarily football-related, but it gets engagement and it gets people thinking about the next game and excited about the team. So, and I can't forget Jamie Cartmell. He tosses around some good content ideas every once in a while. In fact, I think the Nothing Rhymes with Orange campaign was his sort of idea. So we'll call ourselves a team of five on the digital content side.
Yeah, I think in the past, the Lions have rightly so been, you know, criticized for a lack of marketing, and I don't think you can say that at all through this season so far. So describe what a typical week is like for you and your team for a home game. I assume planning starts at the beginning of the week for stories you want to cover and the social media campaigns you want to launch leading up to a home game.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it, Brian, is game driven. So for example, we'll go next week. It's a perfect chance to start plugging it. We already have been plugging it. So next week, the final end of the home and home with Saskatchewan, it's our family day game. And if you recall, it's similar to last year. The main thrust of it is there's going to be some cartoon characters and different types of family activations going on at the game. So if you bring in your kids to the game, you get to meet, I think this year it's Spider-Man, Iron Man, and a couple of the Paw Patrol characters. My daughter's not quite old enough yet, of course, so I'm going to have to start brushing up on this Paw Patrol stuff in a couple years.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get too off base here. As far as a home game goes, you know, next week we've already started it actually, producing a couple of little short videos, a couple of short promos to hype that one up. And for those fans with kids who are listening, quick reminder, thanks to our friends at London Drugs, kids 12 and under can come to the game for $10. That's a great initiative that was started by the organization last season. But a typical, you know, typical game week, it's game driven. You know, for instance, you're coming off a bit of a bad loss last week against the Edmonton Eskimos. So you approach it Monday with kind of looking ahead, and, you know, I mentioned the day one with Devon. So we get Devon on the first day. We had some news to talk about this week with the addition of Ryan Lankford. Should give the special teams a bit of a boost. So I made a point of interviewing him, doing a little bit of feature on him, get his backstory, try to educate our fans on these players as much as we can, because we're learning about these players as they come in as well. So it's a day-to-day thing where we're out at practice doing interviews, doing stories. Again, home games, we have different things we're trying to put across, like the family day thing, and we help out the game day people as well. There's various videos that they'll want done, various themes around the game. I'm not quite sure what we'll be doing as far as family stuff, but if you attended the game against Edmonton, you probably noticed on the video screen, there was different clips from different Western movies, it was Country Western Night, right? Mm-hmm. All tying in with Tim Hicks at halftime. So that's kind of an example. You know, a lot of the stuff we do is sort of relative to what the theme of the game is. So country night last week, family night next week. And on top of that, it's all the football content too. So anything newsworthy with the team, anything worth talking about, we're talking about it. And I know you and I, in our conversations, you know, we've talked about how the last couple of years, the day-to-day media coverage isn't quite what it was. I think that's putting it lightly.
Yeah.
So we try to cover the football part of it too, where we kind of try and act like our own news outlet. And that's where all the things like the written features and the different videos, that's where that all comes in.
How does a home game differ from a road game? You travel with the team, and of course, with the travel and all the other things that happen on the road, I would think that presents you with some challenges that you don't face when you're playing at home.
Yeah, it's a little different in the sense, it mainly doesn't really get different until the day before the game. So a typical home game week, they'll be down at BC Place for a walkthrough, and we'll be, well, again, on those days, we'll be filming a couple of different features that will be on the scoreboard. Whereas a week like this, it's pretty much the same week. The only thing that changes is the day before the game, we're heading to the airport and we're flying, as opposed to having just a final walkthrough at BC Place. And even that, since I started this job in 2016, that road game routine has kind of changed in itself. Typically at the start, a couple of years ago, we'd actually have a full walkthrough at the stadium. Now more than ever, it's pretty much a day before thing. A couple of the Eastern trips a while ago, we'd go 2 days before, have a full day before, have a full practice, and sort of get accustomed to the time change. But this week being an example, I know it's a Western game. I don't think the entire team will even go to Mosaic on the Friday. It'll just be the three or four players that are obligated to do those TSN sit-downs. So it really is... the day before on the road, you fly, a couple guys will go to the stadium maybe for half an hour, and then your day is essentially done. So, you know, road games, there's a little more stuff that happens early in the middle of the week, you know, working ahead on pumping out stories, pumping out videos and content, because once we get to Saskatchewan, in this case, it's a bit of a limited window to do media. But yeah, definitely more obligations and more sponsored elements we have to take care of when we're playing at home. And a lot of that you see on the scoreboard, on the big screen in game.
One thing the Lions have been praised for is their all-access videos in the locker room. And in the past, we've only seen these after a win, but this year the team started showing these after losses as well, including a pretty captivating address to the team by Mike Riley after the loss in Edmonton, which is really cool to see. Is that one of the more popular things that you guys do?
Yeah, big time. And I think after wins, it's one of the first questions we get. Oh, when's game balls coming up? When's game balls coming up? And it's, as far as the losing stuff, it's a tribute to Devon Glaybrooks. And our video guy, John, is our video guy that comes on the road. And he kind of just gets right in there, and got to be subtle about it, because, you know, some of it's sensitive information. We don't put any of that out without getting it approved by either the head coach or the general manager. And I think you mentioned the Mike Riley speech in Edmonton. That was a very telling moment, I think. I mean, that kind of told a lot of people right there, this is Mike Riley's team now. And I know a lot of people are upset at certain veterans that weren't brought back, whether that's a Manny Arsenault, a Solomon Elamimian, a Rolly Lambala. I mean, fans are certainly have a right to be upset. And one of the things I was hearing from people when those moves are being made, it's like, these are good locker room leaders. What are you doing? On February 12th, it became Mike Riley's locker room.
Yeah.
And I think that was evident in the post-game address he did to the team right there. It's a tribute to the head coach and our general manager, Ed Hervey. They let us in. They trust us. You know, they trust that we're not going to put anything out that's going to shed the club in a bad light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a trickle-down effect, again, from Wally Buono. I mean, one of the big reasons Wally lasted as long as he did and was successful for as long as he was that he was willing to adapt. I mean, I think he was the one back in the day that was saying, you know, why don't you mic up a defensive player for a change, like as far as TSN goes. It's all about access. And trust me, Brian, you know, talking to people who do this same job with other teams in this league, it's not like this everywhere else.
No, yeah.
And for that, you know, we have to be grateful. And another reason we wanted to start stringing more victories together, because the happy locker room stuff is the better locker room stuff.
Yeah, still, it was cool to see. No, you don't usually get to see that kind of thing after a loss, that's for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, again, quickly, you know, Takey and Sai, I don't think we ended up putting a video out for it, but, you know, some of the more animated stuff I saw from Coach Claybrooks was the loss in Calgary. You know, both at halftime after they couldn't punch it in from the one, and of course afterwards, that was a pretty crestfallen room, and he sort of did his part to keep everyone pumped up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is cool to be a part of. It really is cool to kind of have a backstage pass and see how it all goes down.
Social media can be a great tool, but it can also be a source of great criticism. Obviously, as part of the organization, you have to bite your tongue at times. How tough is it when fans are slinging insults and anger towards the organization, and do you ever feel like putting people on blast?
So let me get this straight, okay? People don't like the way Coach wears his hat. We've established that.
Oh, my God. Can we please stop with that?
People have told us door hinge rhymes with orange. People have, you know, we sign a kick returner this week, and it's like, oh, can this guy block? Can this play offensive line? Yeah, you're right. You just have to learn to take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, I think it's okay to have fun with it, too. There was an NBA team. I want to say it was the Pelicans. I think it was after the trade deadline or something, where they didn't make any moves, and their Twitter account actually tweeted, look, we appreciate your passion, but we can't make trades. We're just a Twitter account. There's a couple times where we've sort of done stuff like that, and you have to realize it's tongue-in-cheek. I mean, people are reading that know it's tongue-in-cheek, but and it comes with the territory, though. I mean, for as much, you know, we're sitting here talking about how great it is and how people praise the game balls and the celebrations. You know, if you're going to take that, you're going to have to take the stuff when it's not going too well, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's all passion, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I will admit, it does get tough when people get personal. I mean, we sort of have a policy where we don't really block anybody unless it gets really personal or unless it gets really report worthy. If it's something you would report to Twitter or to Facebook or to Instagram, and I want to say that's only happened one or two times that I can recall in my 3.5 years doing this job. But, you know, you just kind of have to sit back and have some fun with it too, right? You can have fun with it without being a total a-hole. And, you know, it just comes the territory, and it just comes with how passionate this fan base is with the BC Lions.
Yeah, well, I know myself, there's probably been some things that I've tweeted that I've regretted over the years.
You and me both.
I know you and I chat during the game sometimes as well, and I can vent my frustration to you instead of putting it out in public. So I appreciate that. You know, this year the club entered the podcast game with yourself and Director of Communications, Jamie Cartmill, starting First and Now, a podcast from inside the Lions Den. You guys talk about things other than the Lions as well, some inside opinions on the club. Talk about your venture and how that's been going.
Yeah, that was kind of something that was really a couple of years in the making. I kind of mentioned it to the people when I started the job that was something we should definitely do, because, you know, we're talking about the landscape of the media changing, and, you know, sometimes the club doesn't get as much play on sports radio as many people think it should. And that's another story for another conversation. But at first it was kind of, I figured, you know, let's ease our way into it. Let's see how it goes. Let's try some other things first. And, you know, I think we kind of this off season, again, was talking earlier in this interview about some of the new stuff we're trying, and we're always pitching ideas, and, you know, how can we always get better? What can we do? And, you know, with my radio background with 1040, and, you know, Jamie was always talking about wanting to start one of his own. And it was kind of, it kind of just ended up happening out of nowhere. We went out and bought some equipment, and we figured, okay, let's just do a couple of dummy segments here. Let's just talk, pretend we're doing a podcast. And probably did that about 3 or 4 times before we really started to get into a groove. And all of a sudden we figured, okay, we're ready to do this thing. And then we tried it for real. And then it was good timing, because I want to say our second or third episode was free agency week. And we actually had Mike Riley and Travis Lule come in together and do kind of a roundtable type thing. And yeah, I think that was episode 3. And, you know, with the changes as far as players and this entire new coaching staff, Devon Claybrooks has been good about coming on a couple times. We just figured, you know what? what better way to get people even more excited about the team than to showcase what we have here in this regard? And took a bit of a break. It was kind of some growing pains. You know, we tried a couple things that didn't work, and then we figured, okay, let's tighten it up a bit and do some specified segments and player interviews. And now that the season's actually here, it's been a bit more easy to do. Although recapping last week's game wasn't too much fun, but
oh, I hear you.
But yeah, you know, and you know how Cartmell is. He's fun. Once you get him going on a rant, it's pretty entertaining. So that's what I've kind of learned. I just got to make him angrier earlier in the episode, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, I appreciate the support on your end. And, I know we love what you do here at the podcast, and Lions fans who want to get a bit more of a football fix. It's definitely good to have more than one podcast at people's disposal.
Yeah, for sure. And Jamie's pretty entertaining on Twitter as well.
Yeah, he is. I mean, if you don't know him, you kind of see what he does, and you might wonder, what's this guy's deal? But you know, you've talked to him in person, you've dealt with him before, and he is kind of a comedian, and that's what kind of makes it fun to do the podcast every week.
Obviously, it's been a tough start for the team on the field. You're around these players and coaches a lot.
Yep.
What's the mood like around the facility these days? And you know, when the team has been losing like they have been, how much tougher does it make to do your job?
Yeah, definitely tougher to do the job when the team's losing. You know, hence all this negative reaction we're talking about. And credit to our players. I mean, even as people who work for the team and we wear Lions colors when we're on the field covering practice, not always easy to talk to these guys under these circumstances. But I'll defer to the conversation I had with Devon Claybrooks in our day one interview. 1-4, sure, but it'd be a lot worse if people were pointing fingers and the locker room has been divided. I mean, I'm sure before my time with the club, there was losing teams here where there was division in the locker room. You're not getting any of that. And guys are upbeat. Guys are taking advantage of the full week. And, you know, say what you want. I mean, full credit to the Edmonton Eskimos for dominating in all three facets last week. But that wasn't an easy situation for us either. I mean, yeah. Long flight home from Toronto, Saturday night, Sunday morning, back at it Monday, and you're playing a Thursday night game against a team coming off a bye.
Yeah.
It's not why the result went down the way it is, but these guys are showing up every day under tough circumstances. Granted, they're professional athletes. You know, these guys get paid money to perform. But yeah, definitely going to be a lot more easier going in there after a couple of wins, and we'll hope it starts this Saturday in Saskatchewan. But the main part of your question is, you wouldn't know it. Once they're out there practicing and executing the drills and everything, it's upbeat, and maybe that's a good sign of things to come. Better be.
Yeah, for sure. Lions are getting set to relaunch their new era uniforms. Can you let our listeners know if anything is imminent on that front and when Lions fans can expect to be able to purchase the new updated jerseys?
Yeah, I believe the original goal was to be able to purchase them at the latest was in time for the home game on August 24th. Do not quote me on that because I've not had a recent update.
Okay.
I know they were expecting them in any time. So as always, I will encourage people to continue to monitor bclions.com and all of our Twitter feeds and all of our social media feeds, because we will let people know when they are on sale.
Good stuff, because I really like those road jerseys.
I wish I had a more concrete answer for you, Brian.
Yeah, I really love those road jerseys, so I think I'm going to waiting
don't we ever. I mean, it's funny, I was scrolling through some pictures on my phone, I guess it was after practice the other day, and I came across some from last season, and I saw a photo of a picture I took on the road behind the bench in Winnipeg, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I looked at that photo, I'm like, man, the current ones really are that much better. I mean, they look awesome when you see them in person and when you see them on TV, but you really have to go back and look at it. The old photos to see, okay. And that's, you know, and again, it's all due respect to the people that worked hard to launch that campaign when Adidas started it in 2016, because a lot of thought went into that. I thought the home ones were really sharp, but I'm just speaking to more how better the road ones are now when I did the old comparison with some photos I took.
It's, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely a classy look.
Yeah. Well, Matt, as a Lions fan, I want to thank you for all that you do. Thank you for you and your team for all you do behind the scenes and on social media for the fans on bclions.com. I know you have a hardworking bunch over there in Surrey, and the fans certainly appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and thanks for taking the time for us tonight.
Yeah, and right back at you. I know you spend a lot of time, you know, retweeting our stuff and pumping up the club even when things aren't so good. So, yeah, it's a two-way street, and yeah, really, I have to kind of pinch myself every day. You know, I grew up watching this team like yourself, and always wanted a job in sports, and was lucky to do that with TSN Radio for a bunch of years, and now I've not only continued it here, but the club has allowed me to sort of spread my wings and pursue a lot of the things that I want to do. So, yeah, appreciate it, and it's definitely a good time, even more so when we're winning.
Awesome, and let's hope that starts this weekend.
Well, Lions go.
Let's check in with this week's opposition, the Saskatchewan Roughriders. And for 20 years, Rod Peterson was the voice of the green and white. He stepped down this offseason to pursue other interests, but he still has his finger on the pulse of Rider Nation, and he joins us now to talk about his new ventures as well as Rider football. Rod, thanks for joining us tonight, and welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Brian. My pleasure.
Like I said, after 20 seasons of calling Riders games on the radio, you stepped down this offseason. Why did you give up a job that you were so clearly passionate about, and do you miss it at all?
Well, a two-part question there. 20 years, time for a change, I would say, would be the best way to answer that from both sides. And I had other ventures that I was interested in, which hopefully we can get into here. And do I miss it? Not a lot. One of the new ventures I'm into is in the sports media in a new field. So that's exciting. We're building something from the ground up. And I'm excited to be a fan again for the first time in those 20 years since 1998 that I'm sitting in the crowd at Mosaic Stadium. And I get to go with my family to the games, be with my friends, which I was kind of missing the last few years. So it's all good. Like I say, time for change. 20 years is a long time. Absolutely. I'm 46 years old. I got a lot of things that I'd like to do. And I'm doing them.
46 is still pretty young, so you got a lot of time to do those things. You took some time off to concentrate on some other passions. You built up a pizza restaurant in Regina, which you recently sold. You've been pursuing your career as an interventionist and a sober living coach for those suffering from addictions. And we had you on last year. You talked about your battles with addiction and the desire to help others. But where was your interest in the restaurant business come from?
It was somewhat out of the blue. I'd always wanted to own a restaurant or be involved in ownership of a restaurant. And we had a plan and a deal together to build a sports bar on the Evraz Place grounds right near the new Mosaic Stadium. Have you been here yet, by the way?
I have not, no.
Oh, well, you're going to have to, hey, why not come out this weekend? But it was a grand slam with the restaurant park of the national chain to put it in. And unfortunately, the deal fell apart. And somehow through that process, through some of the people that were involved there, they said, hey, well, if you really want to get involved in owning a restaurant, why don't you buy into our ownership group here at Famoso, which is a national chain, mostly Western Canadian. I know there's one in the Vancouver area. I think it's in Richmond. And so that's where I got involved in that several months ago, over a year ago. And we just sold it this week and moved on to another venture there, not in the restaurant industry, but that was where it was. We were trying to put one by the new stadium. Didn't work out, so I got involved in another one. And it was fun. Learned a lot and was actually quite humbled that every CFL team, when they came through to play the Riders, came through, whether it was the entire team or some of their staff. That meant a lot to me that they would do that.
Yeah, I did have some preliminary plans to get out there this year, but the wife decided that football vacations needed to be put on hold. We're going to Cabo this year instead, and Grey Cup, of course, so that's it's going to have to wait till next year, I think. You talked about your new venture, back into the sports media business you go, and you recently launched the Rod Peterson Show, an internet Facebook live show that is really taking off not only in Saskatchewan but across Canada and beyond. How did that project get started, and how are you enjoying doing that?
Well, I would like to say it's the most fun I've ever had in the business, but when the Riders were at their peak around 07 to 2010, that was probably the most fun I'd had. This is a close second, and I'll get into that as to why. But when I left this last job, I was working full-time in addictions and mental health with athletes and entertainers, mostly public people. And then just over the last couple of months, that's morphed into the military and working with soldiers. And to say that it's rewarding is an understatement. I really wasn't looking to get into the media at all. Wasn't really even pursuing anything that way. And a company here in Regina, it's a leading tech company, IKS Media, said, hey, we've got a concept here of a Facebook Live talk show, and we think you'd be perfect to host it. Would you consider it? And I said, I'll consider it under these conditions. And they said, cool. We have the same thought, and away we go. And the first couple shows were a little bumpy. We're broadcasting in high definition from our studio here in Saskatchewan to Facebook in Southern California and Silicon Valley. One of only three shows or networks that are even using that technology through a partnership with Facebook. We're something of a pet project for them too. And that's what's exciting. And if you've seen it, and I don't, you know, I know it's people are still discovering it and so forth, but the people are asking me, what is it like? And I say, it's a combination of The View meets David Letterman meets SportsCenter. So because I'm a career radio guy, as you know, the guys behind IKS Media are TV guys. They've done production of live news and supper casts with national networks. They said, leave the TV to us. So I literally show up, sit at a desk and talk. They take care of the whole look. So it kind of looks like the Letterman Show or Jimmy Kimmel. But, and then you got three guys and sometimes gals talking sports. So that's where the View component comes in. And I say SportsCenter because we're always talking sports. And 90% of it is the CFL right now. And why wouldn't it be? Because it's July.
Yeah.
But I've got, you know, the beautiful thing about digital media and particularly Facebook is that after every show, we sit and track the analytics, and our top viewed cities, not shockingly, are on the prairies. But most days it's Regina's number one, Saskatoon 2, Calgary 3, Winnipeg 4, Edmonton 5, and then through some bigger Saskatchewan cities and then into Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, because CFL fans are watching it. And I've had actually some assistant coaches from CFL teams tell me that as soon as they get off the field from practice, they're going inside and watching the show on Facebook Live while they cut video or dissect practice and that kind of thing. So I know some teams would do that. Basically, my friends in the league would do that with my radio show. Now they're doing it with the Facebook Live show where they can actually see it. And the comments we're getting is that, hey, there's not a lot of coverage in our city of our team, and you guys are talking about us. So we want to watch and see what's being said and what we can learn. So, you know, and breaking news has been coming down while we've been on the air, like the Simone Lawrence arbitration upholding his suspension this week, that kind of thing. So in this province, there's no sports radio on the air at that time. So it's working out really well. There was a void, and I think that we identified it and were able to fill it well.
The CFL ventured into the live online show business last year, forming a relationship with Twitter. Online and demand sports media is really the wave of the future in today's crazy tech world. Do you see this as the future of sports media?
You know what? I do. And I, for a lot of reasons that I could talk about all night, and I don't want to put your viewers to sleep or listeners, but what I can say is this: a lot of those national networks wouldn't air CFL shows because they said they weren't getting the ratings or they couldn't get the sponsors. The beautiful thing about new media and digital media is we can track the numbers ourselves. So it's by the amount that ours is growing exponentially with viewers in major markets other than Saskatchewan tells us that there's an appetite for CFL coverage. We've gone deep on the firing of Cavis Reed. We've gone deep on the relationship between Corey Chamberlain and Jim Popp in Toronto, which is a good one, by the way, but both friends of ours. And Jim's been on our show, and he's like, actually every team I think has had somebody on in some form or fashion, and because they're not getting the coverage in their market. And the BC Lions are one of the teams that have agreed the most. G. Roy Simon's been on a couple times. I think Travis Lule has been on three times. Daron Carter's been on, and we've had other players from the Lions that we're trying to get on when their schedule allows. And that's only a good thing. And we're trying to, you know, promote the league, but also talk the truth about certain things like the Cavis Reed firing. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to play ball with anybody because we're, I guess as Gary Lawless said from the Vegas Golden Knights when he was on, we're independent. So I've given my thoughts on CFL 2.0 and the part of it that I don't like, because there are players on teams that will never see the field, and I think that's wrong. I think it's challenging the integrity of the league. And I know for a fact if I'd said that in my old role, I'd be given 40 lashes for not supporting the league. Here I can give my opinion on league matters, and then my phone's blowing up with coaches and agents and players saying it had to be said. Way to go. So that kind of tells me that we're on the right track.
Well, let's get to the this week's football game now. And as you said, you're a fan again. The 1-4 BC Lions visit the 1-3 Saskatchewan Roughriders. Now that you attend games as a fan, how has that experience been for you after 20 years in the broadcast booth?
Well, it's great. I feel in one way that I've never, like the last 20 years were just a dream. And as I just picked up where it left off, because it's the same people, you know, they were going to the games, but now I'm going with them. Mm-hmm. And I get to go with my wife and see friends and smell the smoke from the concession and the barbecue, you know, that kind of thing. I'm experiencing it the way it should be. And while it was fun for 20 years in the broadcast booth, getting there 2 hours early, having great parking, being in a quiet press box, not having to deal with crowds once we left, that was fun for its time. Now this is fun here too. And what's changed, of course, is that we're in a great stadium. Rider Nation's a lot different now than it was in 1998. It wasn't even a thing called Rider Nation back then. But I love the social aspect of it. And I know there's a lot of talk across the league about declining attendance, marginally, not a lot, but it's slipping. I just say there's nothing like being there at all. The running out of the tunnel, the smells of the concession, kibitzing with other fans, there's nothing like it. So if people want to complain, they can, but I'm just not going along with it because I love every single aspect of CFL games.
This is obviously a big back-to-back for both teams. The Lions have already lost the season series against the Edmonton Eskimos and can ill afford to have the same thing happen to the Riders if they have any hopes of making the playoffs in the West and even the crossover. The way the West is looking at the moment, these two teams could be deciding who gets that final playoff spot in the West. How are these two games being looked at in Rider Nation?
Well, as you can imagine, Brian, a million people here, a million different perspectives, and a million different opinions. So I guess if you're asking mine, I really have bought into, in my time around these coaches and players, the one play at a time, 1 week at a time thing. So obviously they're going out to win Saturday. And if and when they do, then they'll worry about the return game in Vancouver. But if you're asking how it's being viewed, a lot of the analysts, including, because I still do a weekly television show that's province-wide, and one of my analysts today from CTV said, oh, if they lose two, then what? Who's getting fired? Does Zach Caleros get forced into retirement? You know, they're already looking at it that way. And, of course, then there are others saying, well, they're going to win both games. That'll finish the BC Lions, and that'll be the end of Daron Carter. So I'm just saying you're getting every opinion, every prediction. I think from what I'd like to see is a split. I'd like to see the Riders win at home. The Lions win out there for their sake, particularly because of my friends with the Lions and how great they've been to my show. And then it would prolong both of them for at least another week or maybe another month in the standings. But I don't think anybody would argue that if you just look at the standings right now, one of these two teams is missing the playoffs, and maybe both of these two teams will miss the playoffs with the way things are shaking out down east. So long story, I would predict a split, almost hope for a split just to keep them in it longer. But if there's a sweep either way, that's probably going to finish that team season. And yeah, to say that by August long weekend is saying a lot to CFL.
Yeah, not necessarily the best thing for the league either.
No.
The Riders started the season with quarterback Zach Caleros, who I think it's safe to say was a plan B in the offseason. It's well publicized that they had interest in Mike Riley and perhaps others, but they weren't able to secure another QB in free agency. They turned back to Caleros, and we all know the story of what happened there. Enter former BC Lion and Argo Cody Fajardo, who's excited fans with his play before a tough outing versus the Stampeders 2 weeks ago. Should Zach Caleros play again?
With absolutely zero communication with the football club regarding Zach Caleros, that's just a disclaimer there. I have no idea what his status is nor what their plan is for him. I think that he should retire. I think he should have retired after last season.
I agree.
I will admit to have been disappointed when the Riders announced they signed him here in free agency this year. Now, as you know, this is a football hotbed here. There's a lot of former coaches, GMs that live here, one of which is Alan Ford. I spent a lot of time with Al, and he defends Jeremy O'Day up and down. He actually signed Jeremy here as a player back in 1999 and said, he can complain about Zach Claros all you want, but if you're Jeremy O'Day, what else could you do? Struck out in free agency on Riley and Bo Levi Mitchell and Trevor Harris. You could look at that as a black mark on O'Day's resume if you wish, or you could say he was left holding the bag by Chris Jones, ill-prepared for free agency. Not his fault. So signing Zach Claros was the only best thing that they could do. Mm-hmm. Now, three plays it took for his season to be finished and maybe his career. I'm just saying, strictly put yourself in O'Day's position, what else could you do?
Yep.
Secondly, Justin Dunk is you're obviously familiar with Justin Dunk of Three Down Nation. Mm-hmm. He was on my show a few weeks ago saying that the Riders stumbled upon perhaps their next quarterback in Cody Fajardo. And I take umbrage with that basically simply as a Jeremy O'Day fan that I don't think he stumbled on anything. He knew what he was getting in Cody Fajardo. The overnight success that took 5 years in this league to become an overnight success. The guys in Vancouver knew what he was all about. The guys in Toronto knew what he was all about. Set a record for yardage for any quarterback in Rough Riders history for his first two games in making his Saskatchewan debut. I don't think that was an accident. So, Zach Claros aside, you know, people are saying, we're waiting for a news conference any day for him to announce his retirement. Why would you when he's making well into six figures? Why would he retire and walk away from that? That's not on him. That's on the Riders. You know, so he's not going to retire. But it's Cody Fajardo's team now. He faces a huge task Saturday night against BC, strictly because I think the Lions obviously know the book on him, even though you got a new defensive coordinator. But there's pressure on BC too. So you got basically a first-year starter in a must-win game, and guys are saying this week, oh, I hope he plays relaxed. I'm like, how could he? given the situation and the pressure that's on his football team here. So again, not looking at two games, looking at one, and it's Saturday night in Regina. That's a must-win game for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And I have not looked to see who's favored yet. I don't think it matters, actually. I think it's going to be a hell of a football game. And obviously, BC wants to prove that they are better than their record shows. Nobody expected this. Nobody. I don't know one pundit that would have thought, even at this point in the season, BC would be fifth. Not with that quarterback. So they got a lot to prove, too. Can't wait.
This will be the first time the Lions have faced their longtime linebacker, Solomon Elamimian, and possibly wide receiver Manny Arsenault on Vancouver radio this week. Elamimian wasn't rocking the boat, saying he had no desire to prove anything to the Lions, that he was just focused on his new team. But you have to think, this is a game he has circled on his calendar.
Well, you would know him better than me. From my friends with the Lions, they're not buying that. They love Solly, and they also understand the reasons why he's not there. They simply couldn't pay him what he was used to making, but they still respect him. And they, you know, you don't win MVP of the league as a defensive player without a fire burning in your belly, whatever it is. So he's only played one game as a Rough Rider. And this was this last game against Calgary. And I was actually seated right down below behind the Riders bench, first row. So I didn't get as good a look at the play as I would have liked. He did take a bad pass interference penalty, which may or may not have been a good call or not. But the summary of his play by the pundits was that it was average. And when he's being paid well above average for his position, there's already heat on Solomon Elamimian to be the prized free agent that they signed. He's still young. I think he's young enough. He's, what are you, 32? Mm-hmm. I hope the lingering injury problems are behind him. But there's a lot of pressure on him Saturday night, but I think the motivation will be enough from within that I think he'll have a good game.
Do you know if Manny Arsenault is going to play or not? I saw that he was practicing with the first team today.
Yeah, well, I got to think that he is. He's been practicing ever since I went up and watched him at training camp in Saskatoon. So if he's with the first team this week, I think you expect him to make his Rough Riders debut, which is actually a pretty big boon, too, because I think when they signed him in free agency, the plan was that he wasn't going to be ready until Labor Day. So very big game for two former BC Lions here Saturday night, which isn't new. We see this scenario year after year when a player faces his former team, but I think this is a pretty salacious one for Lions fans to see what those guys can do.
Now, the Riders have no doubt taken notice of the offensive line woes for the Lions right now, and they have a pretty lethal defensive line that Lions will have to contend with, Micah Johnson and Charleston Hughes being at the forefront of that. They must be licking their chops facing the Lions this weekend.
Well, you think so? And you talk about guys that have stuff to prove. Micah Johnson still looking for his first sack of the season. And I know he's playing from an interior position, but that wasn't the problem when he was in Calgary racking up sacks. He and Charleston Hughes have a competition to see who can, win the sack battle there. And right now, I think it's 5-0 for Charleston. So no matter what BC has planned to protect Mike Riley, they're playing a motivated bunch no matter what. This is actually a front seven for the Saskatchewan defense that's been, there was a lot of pressure on them going in, a lot of expectations, and at 1-3 and giving up quite a bit of yardage, there's a lot of heat on them. A lot of heat on them. So every game's won in the trenches, obviously, and Saskatchewan likes the way they match up against BC on Saturday night here. And so we'll see what Jarius Jackson's cooked up in terms of negating that rush and getting the ball out of Mike Riley's hands and protecting him, because clearly it hasn't gone the way they planned. And actually, I'd like to ask you a question, Brian. I had heard that Mike Riley got in an argument with fans going off the field the other night in Vancouver, and I thought, was that Eskimo fans or Lions fans that he got, or did he even get in an argument at all? Did you hear that story at all?
I did. Farhan Lalji actually reported it on the post-game show. As he was walking off at halftime, one of the fans, yelled something down to him, and Mike basically told him, "Do you want to come down here and say that to my face?" So, I believe it was a Lions fan. He didn't specify, but I'm assuming it was. But I've seen frustration with Mike on several occasions this year. Just how could he not be frustrated after getting pounded the way he's been pounded? So I'm not surprised that he made a snap a little bit at a fan, and fans have to, that fan obviously doesn't know what he's talking about, because it's not Mike's fault he's getting pounded on every play.
No, not at all. But that's why they call them fans.
Yeah.
Fanatics.
Yeah.
And actually, Travis Lule has referred to himself as our West Coast correspondent on our show and the Rod Peterson show. And if you remember in week two, when the Lions blew a 14-point lead with 2 minutes to go, mm-hmm. or allowed 14 points with 2 minutes to go, Riley was losing it on the sidelines that night. I'm watching it on TV going, who's he yelling at? Like everybody or himself or what? And I asked Travis what he thought about Mike Riley losing his stack. And he goes, hey, I've been there. I don't blame him. Yeah. He's a fiery guy. BC knew what they were signing. Obviously, Ed Hervey had him in Edmonton. And I do think, Brian, I really do, that BC is going to pull this thing out before all is said and done. It's just when you're 1-4, and I'm not talking about anything specific here, but it's just the pressure mounts, fingers start getting pointed, there's doubt within the locker room about each other and maybe about the coaching staff, particularly that young staff the Lions have. These are some emerging storylines early on. This is why we love the game so much. This is the kind of stuff in January and February when it's minus 57 out here that you dream of talking about this stuff. So it's fun to see how it will all unfold.
Chris Jones' sudden departure this offseason put the Riders in a tough spot, and head coach Craig Dickinson is now steering the ship there. I know you're a big fan of his. How would you rate the job he's done over the Riders' four games?
Dickinson, I think he's done well. I know that there's an immense amount of pressure on him. I was a fan of Chris Jones, too. I've been a fan of just about every coach that's come through here. The thing with Craig, and we're just talking about it over supper tonight, is tough situation for him. He had long told me that he's wanted to be a head coach in the CFL, but it had to be the right situation. And I thought when Jones left, Craig was the only hire. It was only possible hire. And there were stories, of course, that the Riders asked for permission to talk to LaFelice and Jamie Elizondo. I don't even think they had any desire to hire him in the first place. I think it was Craig was the right guy. It was the guy they wanted. But all of a sudden, you get saddled with an injury-prone quarterback in a tough division. I say the Riders have a good team, but they're in a division of great teams, and we're seeing that. And I think he's in a pinch. I think it's a good thing that he's got a three-year contract. because he'll live to see the end of that. I don't have any doubt. There's no talk about his job here internally.
Nor should there be.
But I go up to training camp in Saskatoon. I think it was about day 7 that I got there for the first time. And I'm talking to coaches and players and staff. And the first thing out of their mind was that, or first thing out of their mouth was how relaxed the atmosphere is under Craig Dickinson. And I thought, well, anything would be more relaxed than what Chris Jones ran. I mean, that was just pure tension 24/7. And I think at times the team played that way, you know, pre-snap penalties, the amount of penalties that they took and mistakes that they made. That was just under Chris Jones. That was Chris Jones ruled by fear, which does work because it worked for Don Matthews for years too. Craig does not rule that way. And I think the one thing that people are starting to, they better start seeing some wins here soon, because the criticism I hear from the fans is that maybe the atmosphere is too relaxed. Maybe he's too nice of a guy. But I think that that's not the case. I think that he's a renaissance coach. He's the kind that is a player's coach, and the players will play for him. But they need to start it, because they haven't shown a lot of fire coming out of the tunnel and with the way they play. And, you know, if their coach's job was to ever be in jeopardy, I think that might light a fire under them. And it's not yet, but they need wins, because it gets hot here fast when this team's not winning.
That criticism is probably a little more valid than the way Devon Claybrooks wears his hat, which seems to be a weekly topic around here. The Simone Lawrence suspension was upheld by an arbitrator today, meaning Lawrence will serve the second game of his suspension on August 1st when the Ticats play the Riders. I guess the timing of that worked out okay. But what are your thoughts on this whole process?
Well, that's a loaded question. I mean, the hit obviously was a target. Simone, although he's never been punished for that before, he should have been. You saw him coming after Henry Burris's legs a few years ago. He is what I would call a repeat offender, even though the CFL missed it the first time, which isn't a shock. So that night when it happened, I said, this will be a one-game suspension. This is what it should be, because they never suspend anybody in this league. They'll send a message, it'll be one game, and we'll move on. And all of a sudden, they came out with 2 games, and I'm like, oh, wow, Randy Ambrosi's really serious about this. Good. But you knew it would go to an appeal. I don't have a problem with any of that. None of that was out of line or even out of character. But when it went to the arbitrator and said, we got to wait 3 weeks for this even to be heard, and then Simone's got to spend 10 hours with an arbitrator for a discussion that probably should have taken 10 minutes, that's just wrong. This is not labor relations like SaskTel or whatever you guys, you know, a government agency. This isn't that. This is pro sports. And that's where the embarrassment factor came in. And then, of course, for the arbitrator to just eventually uphold the suspension in the first place, I'm like, why did we go through all this? This is a waste of time and a waste of money. I think Randy Ambrosi misspoke when he called out the Players Association for defending their player. I feel sorry for Zach Caleros, because you wonder who was defending him, although it wouldn't have mattered. Let's not pretend that Zach is out because of the Simone hit. Any hit was going to knock him out, in my opinion. That's the sad part of it. But if you're asking me what I think, this is Randy Ambrosi's problem, but he did not create the problem. He inherited this whole process. So I would think in the offseason, of the long list of things the CFL needs to look at, this would be one of them. This would be near the top, this whole process, because you can find arbitrators. I know one in particular that is a CFL alum that's willing to do it. So, Brian, you don't see this in the NHL, NFL, NBA. If something goes to an arbitrator, it's dealt with 24, 48 hours, 72 hours at the most, because money talks. And so that needs to get sorted out soon.
Yeah, I completely agree with your point about who was looking after Zach Caleros. And that's my whole thing with the whole issue, is the Players Association is defending the offender all the time and not the guy that, you know, was impacted by it the most. So that's unfortunate. But Rod, thanks so much for taking time to chat with us tonight. I always enjoy chatting with you, and I encourage all our listeners to turn into the Rod Peterson Show, because you just don't talk Riders. You cover a lot of CFL topics with guests from across the league as well as other sports. Before we let you go, just remind everybody where they can find the show.
It's pretty simple, I think. Go to Facebook. Just go to the search on Facebook, search the Rod Peterson Show, and you'll be able to watch it live or past episodes, and also rodpeterson.com/podcast. You can access the audio only there. and we're live every day from 10 a.m. to noon Mountain at rodpeterson.com. So there's a lot of different ways. And I appreciate that, Brian. And we'll have to get you on to talk some Lions if you're willing to reciprocate the favor.
Hey, anytime. Good stuff. Thanks, Rod. All the best.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, that's it for episode 137. And I want to thank our guests, Matt Baker, digital content coordinator for the BC Lions, and Rod Peterson of the Rod Peterson Show, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to check out all they have to offer in the way of handmade jewelry on our website, bclionsden.ca. You can find the link to them there. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. For more on this week's opponent, check out the Piffles Podcast at piffles.com. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojokemp. And on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. Until next week, I'm Brian Walrishan. On behalf of the absent Mojo Kemp, enjoy the games this weekend. And as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.